This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptic prediction about to come true? Winds of death sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Welcome to a special edition of the Really Awful Movies Podcast, Episode 9B, a conversation with grindhouse expert and publisher, illustrator, and writer of Cinema Sewer, Robin Bucci.
Robin, welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, man. Great to have you.
Yes, good to be here.
I've been a fan of Cinema Sewer for a number of years now. I don't have every issue, but I have pretty much every, I have the majority, I'd say.
That's cool.
I love it. So you began Cinema Sewer in 1997, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
And if you wouldn't mind, to explain to our listeners the genesis of Cinema Sewer, how it began.
My background is in comic books. I was a comic book artist, and I started self-publishing my own work back in '91. So all the way through the '90s, I was doing comics, and it was fun. But I was starting to get a little bit bored with it, and I wanted to talk about other things.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of through the mid-90s, I'd really started getting into cult films and exploitation films, old drive-in movies, vintage porn.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a lot of this stuff, and I thought it would be kind of a cool idea to use comics as kind of the visual look of comics and the lettering of comics and the aesthetics of comics, but to talk about movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I had I originally tried it out with a friend who had been doing a zine, and he asked me if I wanted to contribute something to it, and I said, yeah, I'd like to do a movie review column, and so that was really how kind of Cinema Sewer started, and his zine went under, like, the next issue, and I was like, well, I still want to do this, so I was like, well, I'll just, nobody else is going to do it, I'll do it, so that was when I started photocopying up copies of Cinema Sewer, and it was just like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, folded over, and it was like, maybe 7 or 8 sheets, and then staple them, and then stick them in the mail, and mail them off, and it's grown exponentially since from there.
Hmm. Would it be fair to call Cinema Sewer a zine, or would you prefer a comic book, a magazine? What do you?
I always call it a zine, but magazine is good as well.
Okay.
It has comics in it, but I wouldn't call it a comic just per se, because it's comic usually is just something that's all comics, whereas
panels and so on.
It's probably more like 80% text. So.
Yeah. No. To me, it's a zine. I mean, it's definitely got that DIY aesthetic. That sort of. Punk sort of spirit and attitude. I mean, the fact that you pretty much do is 75% of it yourself, the illustrating, the writing, the lettering, you do the inking as well, I take it?
Yeah, that's right. There's other contributors, but yeah, like you said, it's about 75% me, and I like to have other people, other friends who are artists that mm-hmm. take part, or other writers, and it's been a fun thing because it's brought me together, just the magazine itself is kind of like this glue that just reaches out and sticks to people and brings them to me. it's like most of my friends I've made because of the magazine,
right.
And a lot of the people who I talk with online have found me because they wanted to, chat with the guy who makes the zine. So it's a kind of an awesome way to meet people.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you how I got into Cinema Sewer. I was at, in Toronto we have TCAF, the Toronto Comics Arts Festival. And put on by The Beguiling, and there was an artist there by the name of Jim Rugg, who has contributed to your to Cinema Sewer.
I love Jim, yeah.
And I was just, I was looking at Jim's work, and I sort of, I kind of liked his sensibility, and I saw this, I guess what looked like a comic book, there was a yellow cover on it, and I picked it up, and I just started flipping through, and I said, this is what I've been looking for all my life. I mean, you were talking about everything. I mean, like, your sensibilities are my sensibilities, the movies you liked were the movies I liked. So, yeah, Jim said, I have this, I did this little cartoon here. Let me autograph it for you. I bought it, took it home, read it cover to cover. The next day, I went to Suspect Video. You're aware. Right. Picked up every back issue I could find, and from then I've been trying to, track down pretty much every issue I've got. I also have your books. I have some of your Retonatron mixtapes. I'm a big fan, big supporter.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Retonatron?
Well, okay, I love them. And, you know, it's funny, I'm watching them and I'm alternately, like, laughing my ass off and puking my guts out. You know what I mean? Like, it really depends on the scene.
Well, yeah, they're video mixtapes. That's the thing that we really wanted to do with them. I'm actually not the editor. My friend Rule is.
Okay.
But the thing we really wanted to do with them was do a callback to the old video mixtapes that used to be on VHS and traded around through the mail back in the 90s. And we just hadn't seen a lot of people doing that. Maybe it's internet culture. I don't know what it is. But it kind of died off, so we really wanted to bring that back.
Mm-hmm. And also with the last volume, I mean, even the way it was designed, the cover, it really looked like one of those old sort of clamshell VHS that you would find in the old mom-and-pop shops. And,
there's,
I love mixtapes, but I mean, some of those clips, particularly the Japanese ones, I don't know where you came up with that stuff, where you dug them up, but,
I provided a lot of the clips, yeah.
Did you?
So, a lot of the stuff came from my collection.
Your own personal collection.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk movies with you. Obviously, you're into, what you're into is what I'm into. I mean, you're into grindhouse, you're into exploitation, you're into horror, you're into blaxploitation. And that's something, where to begin? I wanted to maybe ask you, like, if there was one or two sort of seminal films that you wanted to discuss that really, like, sort of put you on the path to, you know, who you are today in terms of doing cinema sewer. Like, what made Robin into Robin, so to speak? What movie was the impetus for turning you into who you are?
Well, I've had that question before, and it's not all that of an interesting answer. The films that really shaped me early on, of course, are all the films that a lot of people have seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like Terminator, for instance, that movie's been talked to death. So,
yeah.
I don't know if we need to talk about Terminator, but that for me, that was a film that took me from Dark Crystal and the Muppet movie, watching, science, really kind of crazy science fiction and cult films. And another film, for instance, that really shaped me as a person and kind of all the stuff that I do is a documentary called Call for Confidential that was done in 1988 by a director named Ron Mann.
Yes.
Again, not a film that, generally you'd want to go in depth with, but uh-huh. that was a film that I saw it the next day I started self-publishing my own comics, and I can't think of another movie actually that shaped my life more than that did.
It's sorry to interrupt you, it's interesting you mentioned Comic Book Confidential because I remember seeing that movie for the first time. I was flipping through, late one night, City TV, and all of a sudden, because I was a comic book fan prior, and then I kind of got out of it, now I'm back in hardcore. But, I'm watching it, I'm and particularly the segments on, the Seduction of the Innocent, the Wortham, the Trials, the EC Comics, and so on. So I'm transfixed. I loved it, right? And talked about the underground comics and stuff I'd never really heard of before, the Crumbs, Zippy the Pinheads, etc. Loved it. Yeah, and I had the pleasure of meeting Ron Mann about a year ago and told him, and told him how much, that particular documentary really affected me. And even though I wasn't a comic reader at the time, it stuck with me. And I've revisited it since, and it's fantastic. So, Comic Book Confidential. So what would you say brought you, what exploitation films come to mind, or genre films of any sort, horror, etc. Something
early on that was really big for me?
Or something early on, or just something, something that, you wouldn't mind discussing, something that really sort of, one of your go-to movies.
Well, I'm a big fan of the movie Vice Squad. Have you ever seen that one?
Is that the one with Dale Midkiff?
It's got it's done by Gary Sherman,
mm-hmm.
who did Dead and Buried, and it's basically it all kind of takes place on one night, and it's this what's his name? it's the He plays a pimp in this movie.
And he's like this. He's almost like he's like Terminator the pimp.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's basically just trying to, like, he's hunting down a hooker.
Exactly. Yep, I've seen it.
Throughout the entire film.
Yep.
And so it's, I love how sleazy it is, because it all takes place on, like, the kind of the mean streets of Los Angeles. And so it's like this kind of night in the life of, and she's like running for her life, and it's just, like, I don't know, I thought it was a crazy movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, from what I recall, I mean, I think it was one of his, for lack of a better term, bitches, right, who was trying to, trying to get away, and, yeah, I mean, this guy was relentless, and that's why I sort of say Terminator the Pimp, and it was sleazy. I mean, you had, this guy, I can't remember the name of the actor, but I'm pretty sure he once played Elvis in a TV movie.
Yeah.
And that's why it was so incongruous to me, because, I mean, I remember seeing this guy's Elvis Presley, and then he's this like, horribly sadistic pimp. So yeah, but Vice Squad is definitely an interesting one.
There's a crazy scene of that where they're like, the cop asks her if she's a hooker, and she's like, does a teddy bear have cotton balls? I think that's the best answer.
What about Russ Meyer? Was that is that somebody you're a fan of? Is that somebody who you
Sure. I mean, big time. I mean, he's one of the greatest exploitation directors. Mm-hmm. He's definitely up there, along with Sarno and all of the big exploitation directors in the 60s. And then he went right into the 70s, too. But, I saw Up pretty early on. That was, like, a pretty game changer for me. I love Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill.
Yep.
It's kind of funny when you look at that movie. I think a lot of people think it's way dirtier than it is. There's actually no nudity in that film at all.
It's kind of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre of sexploitation. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people think that's way gorier than it really is, right?
Yeah, it is. You're right.
And it's sort of like the reputation precedes itself, and people watch and go, well, wait a second. I mean, I'm not seeing as much blood, and, you know, and it's the same with Faster Pussycat. I mean,
even the censors fell for it, man. The Canadian censors gave it an R rating.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in that film that deserves an R rating.
Not at all.
There's no swears. There's no nudity. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But it's just on reputation alone. It's the fact that he's done all these other movies. I don't even know if they watched it. They were just like, yeah, give it an R.
It's Russ Meyer, slap an R in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Mudhoney and... God, there's so many Super Vixens. You did a lot. I have that box set that Arrow put out in the UK.
Right, yeah.
It got put up on, like, Amazon.UK, like, for so cheap a couple times. It was almost like a mistake or something. You get, like, an entire box set of Russ Meyer movies. And I don't know if you've seen, like, the Russ Meyer estate, what they sell the films for.
Oh, they're like $50, $60 for, like, a DVD or something.
Yeah, and they're terrible prints. Like, the quality isn't good, and there's no extras, and it's like, and none of money is going to, it's like, the people who are running into state are fucking idiots.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically, they've kind of taken over. They were like, he had like dementia and stuff in his later years, and he ended up leaving like his entire estate to these, like, basically grifters.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't feel too bad about, you know, having the money go somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. So we got Russ Meyer. What about Franco? Just Franco.
Never been all that crazy about Franco. He's okay, you know, here and there, but I don't seek out his work like a lot of people do.
Kind of like, I mean, he's an acquired taste, and B, he's a taste that it's easy to acquire and then sort of like not acquired. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
He's got all, you know, extremely prolific, but some of his stuff is incredible. Vampiros, Lesbos, etc. But then there's so much crap. I mean, especially his later films are just quite unwatchable. So what other...
I listened to the soundtrack for Vampire's Lesbos.
Ah, it's amazing. It's incredible.
It's a great soundtrack.
It's probably the best... Well, no. It's not the best thing about the movie. The best things are actually the two, you know, nubile vampires, but it's the second best thing, I would say.
So
you mentioned Sarno. What other sexploitation directors are you fond of?
Let's see. A lot of them that I really like are just, they only made like two or three movies, or, you know, they didn't make up, so I don't even really think of them in terms of directors, but a lot of them, like, I love, oh man, there's so many good ones, dude. Aroused is a great one. Some of them even got put out by Something Weird, and I don't know if you know, but I used to write a lot liner notes for a bunch of Something Weird DVDs.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I do have a bunch of their DVDs, but no, I don't think I recalled one of your liner notes. Was that back, like, sort of the Frank Henenlotter sort of when he was doing the From the Vault type stuff, or was that... No, that must have been earlier.
He's worked pretty closely with them on some stuff, but...
Yeah.
Another one I like is The Defilers,
mm-hmm.
one of the earliest Ruffies.
Yeah.
So that falls under sexploitation as well.
For sure.
And, oh man, there's so many good ones. And so, Vibrations, that's a Sarno one. I love his stuff. Did you see the documentary that recently got made about him?
I have not. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing it.
Check it out. It's one of the best films of the 2014, mm-hmm. for sure.
You know, another, speaking of documentaries, I was just, in preparation for our chat today, I was flipping through my copy of CinemaSphere Volume 3, and I was reading your retrospective of Canon films.
Oh, yeah.
And have you seen Electric Boogaloo? Boogaloo? Yeah.
Yeah. I have. That's actually my second favorite film in 2014.
Yeah? Okay, because that's another one I have yet to see, but I love Canon. I mean, we have Ninja 3, The Domination, going up on the site tomorrow. We got my review of that.
I love that movie.
That's just a batshit insane movie. I mean, it's, you know, like, it's you know, I'll be honest with you.
The floating sword scene is great.
The floating sword, the spinning arcade machine, I mean, you know, the sort of 20-minute workout-esque, you know, aerobicize. Like, I mean, the one thing I found really hilarious is when she goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, there's nothing wrong with you, save for your ESP and your fascination with Japanese culture. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, first of all, you have ESP, and that's not something a doctor thinks is something, you know, worth a follow-up visit. And up until that point, I mean, the only thing that Lucinda Dickey, I mean, you know, from the Break-In films as well, who, you know, was pretty hot, and then she sort of disappeared after that. I think she made the Break-In films, she made Cheerleader Camp, or Cheerleader Massacre, and Ninja, and then she sort of disappeared. But I mean... the only thing she seemed into, besides, you know, the flowing story, was the only thing she was into was like leg warmers and leotards. So it was batshit insane. And all of a sudden, you got like James Hong coming out, and he's sort of doing this kind of dress rehearsal of Big Trouble in Little China, and then he goes all full Exorcist, and then finally, you know, you get like some ninja action at the end. Well, yeah, I mean, and the opening scene, I mean, come on, incredible.
Yeah.
10 minutes of just pure carnage.
I saw that one on VHS back in junior high.
Yeah?
For the first time. That was kind of how I got really into, like, a lot of VHS. I didn't even own a VCR until I was, like, 18. So a lot of what I would do was just, like, I had a membership to a video store, and I would just go over to friends' places on weekends for sleepovers and just bring videos to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't have a VCR in my house. So that was one of those mini movies that I saw during sleepovers.
Well, like, I was one of these guys. I mean, we had a VCR. In fact, we had one of the... I remember my mother coming home with one of those gigantic top loader things that weighed about, you know, 90 pounds, right? With a remote that you connected directly into the machine with the wire. And so, yeah, I mean, we were renting stuff, like, way back in, I guess, like, 82, 83. But it was all, like, you know, family-friendly shit, like Popeye and Pippi Longstocking and so on. And I was one of these kids, you know, walking up and down the video store aisles, just looking at all these, you know, softcore kind of 80s TNA flicks, like your Bikini Car Washes and so on, and just being like, oh, man, I want to rent that so bad. I want to rent that so bad. You know, and just waiting for the day when I was old enough to come in and go in there without parental supervision and being able to rent some of these movies. The funny thing is, though, is that when I finally did rent the movie, 99.9% of the time, the people on the cover weren't even in the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
I mean, they're sexy movies, don't get me wrong, but I mean, these really, you know, bucks and beautiful women you saw on the covers were in. I mean, another example of that would be, I guess, the Slumber Party Massacre.
Yeah.
If you look at the posters for those ones, those women weren't in the movie either, so, you know?
There's a few video companies that did that, where it was, yeah, you got less and less of that on DVD, but yeah, a lot of those video companies would put out, like, covers that had nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think a lot of them even had the covers ready before the film was, before a single frame was shot, you know?
Yeah, so like a lot of the direct-to-video stuff especially, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. And that was the stuff, I mean, like I said, I was transfixed. I mean, and then, of course, I would, you know, the horror as well. I mean, I was kind of a latecomer to horror in the sense. I was kind of scared of my own shadow up until I was in my early 20s, but I still would go into the horror room and I would kind of, like, in the video store and just be like, alternatively, like, terrified and fascinated. So I remember seeing the cover for Blood Feast. And that was one of the most lurid things I've ever seen in my life, you know? And I remember turning it over and seeing these severed limbs. And, you know, I mean, basically it's red paint. But, you know, to my impressionable...
Very red painted,
yeah, indeed, yeah. But to my impressionable 8-year-old mind, I mean, it was absolutely insane. What are your thoughts on Herschel Gordon Lewis?
I like Herschel Gordon Lewis. I like 2000 Maniacs is my favorite one, I think.
Best theme song. The theme song can't be beat.
I like his stuff. It's for me, they're kind of one watchers, really. You only kind of need to see him once each. So I mean, to me, he's interesting in a historical context,
mm-hmm.
but they're not films that I really revisit a lot or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Although I know some fans, he has some very, like, you know, fans that are just rave about his films, but I don't know, man.
Okay, so then what are some of the films that you do revisit over and over again?
I have like just certain ones that I watch kind of constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia Newton-John's Xanadu, I watch that movie all the time.
I haven't seen it. You know, like you, I'm an aficionado of bad cinema. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For example, Zardoz. I mean, I'm sure you've seen Zardoz,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's an incredible film. Yeah. Xanadu is something I just want to get my hands on it. I'd like to see it. I haven't seen it.
It's kind of a gong show.
Yeah.
I think I first started watching it like, oh my god, this is the worst thing. It's such a bad movie. And then it kind of like got its claws into me, and then I'm like, no, wait, this is not a bad movie.
It transcends itself, and all of a sudden
I need to watch this movie all the time. It's kind of like a virus you catch, like the Xanadu virus or something. Affects your brain, yeah. So, yeah, watch out. Don't fucking toy with that movie. It's serious. It's just like hard drugs.
Is it? Yeah, is it kind of like almost like, you know, sort of like the Ringu or something? Like, you know, you watch you watch Xanadu, and all of a sudden a week later you're turning into like this roller skating, you know, Olivia Newton-John fan singing Magic or something. That was on the soundtrack, right? The song Magic. Am I mistaken or?
Yeah, Magic's on there. Yeah.
Cool.
they split up the soundtrack with her and ELO. So ELO did like half the soundtrack, and she did the other half.
Interesting combination.
An odd choice.
I was going to say, yeah. It does sound, it's not exactly chocolate and peanut butter, you know?
Well, I love a lot of 70s horror and 80s horror. I guess I'm kind of different in you than I was really into horror at a young age, and then I kind of got out of it as I went. Like, it was kind of my gateway into, like, other genres,
okay.
Other genre film. And then in the last 15, 20 years, I've really lost interest in horror in a huge way, actually. So a lot of times when you'll see horror written about in cinema store, I'll get other people to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people criticize Cinema Sore actually because there's not enough horror. It doesn't cover horror films enough, and I've always found that kind of strange because the horror as in the zine world, or in podcast land, or really any aspect of film fandom, it's about 75% to 90% horror films.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
So to criticize a zine for not having enough horror content is like literally criticizing, like, you know, a 1990s comic for not having enough superheroes in it or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's already like the large majority of the of like what's happening. It's like, can't there be like one or two zines? It's not entirely about horror.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, it's like, you know, there's room for discussion of other genres, and I think that horror just gets too much, especially in like film websites or just but really anything. I mean, when was the last time you went to a biopic convention? You know what I mean? Like, it's...
No, I agree. Or like a WIP, like Women in Prison convention or something, you know?
Exactly.
Okay, so what's your go-to Women in Prison flick? Let's talk about that.
The first one I ever saw was Sweet Savage. I remember it was like, I was in like a pawn shop in the mid-90s, like around 95. Mm-hmm. It came to pretty late. And there was like, yeah, this tape, and it just said Sweet Savage. And I thought, actually, the reason I bought it, it was like $2. I thought it was porn. I was like, oh man, it's porn. Like, this pre-internet. So I was like, yeah, shit, sure. I there's some porn here. Oh my god. So then I get home, I'm like, oh fuck, this is porn. This is like women in prison. What the fuck is this? I'm like, oh my god, this is better than porn.
Exactly.
They're tied up and they're imprisoned. And,
And they're
scantily clad, and they're having cat fights.
And they're rolling around the mud, and they're taking showers, and yeah.
So then, yeah, that was game over for me, man. I had to see as many women prison movies as I could. I found the films of Jack Hill, of course. And Big Bird Cage, and Big Dollhouse, and those are two of my favorites of all time, for sure.
Yeah, Chained Heat was my first one.
Which one?
Chained Heat.
Oh, yeah, excellent, excellent movie.
And yeah, like I remember, like, I'm watching that movie with my father. Actually, we're at the video store together. Yeah, we're at the video store together, and my father was sort of had this sort of fixation on women in prison movies. So he just picked it up and he put it in. And now, I think I was about I was about maybe 14. And I'm sitting there watching with my dad, and I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm feeling kind of funny right about now, you know, as I'm watching this movie. And like, there was a couple of scenes there where I was like, I'd like to excuse myself for a moment or two, you know, but. It was pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I like, well, you know, of course they go from like maybe basically the 70s, and you could go women in prison genre is kind of an interesting one because it died. It was like, it's kind of like blaxploitation films. It has a beginning, and it has a very specific like cutoff date, you know. Mm-hmm. Like there's been the occasional one that's come along, somebody doing kind of a retro thing, but you know, when you think about the women in prison genre at its heyday, it was a genre that every single country took part in, you know. If you look at the cinema of any country, you can find, you know, in the 70s and early 80s, they're going to have a women in prison movie.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, well, a lot of them are, of course, shot in the Philippines, but, I mean, yeah, I think, like, Indonesia have a lot of them as well, or am I...
Yeah, pretty much every country did.
Yep.
As long as they, you know, were allowed to show scantily clad women in their movies.
Yep.
That was something they had. Same thing with, like, you know, every country has its own, you know, Death Wish ripoff or its own version of Jaws. You mm-hmm. know, these kind of major, these seminal genre films that just transcended language and boundary, you know, kind of territorial boundaries of countries.
Have you seen the Turkish Death Wish?
Which one?
The Turkish Death Wish.
Oh, is that Salat?
I believe so, yeah.
Watched the entire movie.
Oh, that's great.
At a friend's place when we were watching it. It was kind of on in the background, so I was trying to watch it, but I didn't get to see the whole thing. It looked really cool, though.
Oh, it's good. I mean, that guy, I it's almost blasphemy to say, but I think he out-Bronsoned Bronson.
Actually,
you and I, we have something in common. We both really like Death Wish 3.
Oh, yeah. I love Death Wish 3. That's my favorite one, actually.
That's just like, it's batshit insane. You know what I mean? Like, there's at that point, you're throwing... I mean, it's funny, because, I mean, with the first Death Wish, I mean... Yeah, okay, it had your exploitation elements, but it was a movie, you know what I mean? The critical reaction at the time probably was vilified because of its quote-unquote glorification of violence, right? But there was something to be commendable about Death Wish, you know what I mean? It has something to say. But
it's got very right-wing kind of, or even like libertarian kind of values, with the whole idea of like, you know, the legal system isn't going to help. You got to take, you know, mix the law into your own hands and kill people who do wrong by you. Or
yeah, exactly.
So I have like very, you know, liberal politics, but my absolute favorite, you know, genre films are ones that have the exact opposite, right? The exact opposite politics. So that's one thing I never really understand. People are like, I don't enjoy that movie because it doesn't share my worldview, or there's no characters in it that have my same political leanings. I'm like, that's fucking retarded.
It's,
you know? You know,
it's
like,
a fucking movie, you know what I mean?
You need to see yourself in all your fucking movies.
I'm a liberal like you, but I mean, you know, if that was my mentality, I'd be doing nothing but watching Michael Moore documentaries, you know what I mean? So...
Yeah, I don't need constantly to be, you know, to have my you know, political leanings, you know, vindicated or something. It's like, you can take 5 minutes of your life and enjoy a movie.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, just as kind of like a segue, I mean, like, it's, you know, because we were talking about these films, that, you know, from the 70s and 80s. I mean, these were different times, obviously, right? I mean, you can get away with a lot more than you can today. I mean, films, you know, I'll even watch a movie, like, let's say, and this is not... an exploitation or a genre film, but like a movie like 48 Hours, you know what I mean? I saw it for the first time like 2 years ago, and I'm just watching it, like, I'm kind of shocked by the casual racism. I mean, you cannot say, you know, like, some of the stuff that Nick Nolte was calling Eddie Murphy, you know, like, you could not get away with that today. However, and I mean, you know, and it's, there's something to be said, you know, for, you know, like, it being a bit more of an enlightened society, but at the same time, I mean, political correctness has just, it's running rampant, you know what I mean?
To the point
that, you know, and I mean, I know, like, you know, you've been quite vocal on Facebook about everything that's been going on in Paris and whatnot, and, you know, and people, you know, all of a sudden saying, well, you know, like, bring in, you know, the whole, well, they were racist magazine, like, you know what, fuck that, right?
Well, the problem with that is that you've got so many people kind of knee-jerking to these kind of images that they view as racist, and they're looking at these images, and people do that, you know, the same thing with movies to some degree, although at least with movies they're almost always translated, so you've actually got, you know, subtitles, or you've got them dubbed so that the language is there, whereas in these comics people are looking at them completely without the language. There's like context free. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, that's a racist image because it uses racist, you know, iconography. They're like, no, you can actually say something that's anti-racist.
Exactly, using racist imagery.
Yeah. Same way, like, say, for instance, like a Sarah Silverman, you know, she uses racist language to make fun of racists, or Stephen Colbert, you know, makes fun of Republicans in the
The stereotypical Republican, exactly.
So it's like, people are so fucking simple-minded that they just knee-jerkly, just like, oh, look, it's a character that, you know, has a big nose, and it's like, it's racist, because it's racist against Jews, or something. Uh-huh. No, man, it's like, you're not fucking looking at this in context.
No, that's the thing, like, that's a key word, is context. Like, nobody, it's like, it's almost like, because like, the society we live in now, like, everything is instant gratification, you know, that...
Exactly.
Nobody has, you know, nobody looks at, like, what's surrounding it, you know what I mean? And what are they actually saying? And so, with this lack of, you know, contextual analysis, I mean, people are just...
it's instant, right? It's a kind of clickbait culture where you just, like... do you ever catch yourself on Facebook or something and you're, like, just spending, like, half your time correcting, like, giving people, like, links to Snopes or something?
Yeah.
Fuck, because they can't be fucking bothered to, like, research something for 5 seconds on Google to find out if it's true before they share it.
The hyper-political correctness is running rampant, and I mean, like, as I said before, I mean, it's you know, yes, you know, it's great that we live in, I mean, you know, the stuff that used to be, you know, said and, you know, accepted as cultural, you know, what's the word, you know, appropriate, you know, it should have no place in today's society.
There's a level of appropriateness. I kind of ran into this the other day. I screened, Switchblade Sisters for kind of an audience, people in a bar.
Okay.
Jack
Hill Classic, yeah.
What's that?
Jack Hill Classic, Switchblade Sisters, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a female gang movie, and you know, it takes place in the 70s, and I thought, oh, like, you know, people are going to be like really into it, even if they just want to fucking laugh at it. I don't care if they want to be like, oh, you know, what a cheesy old movie. Like, well, you know, I don't care, as long as they're having a good time watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And except there was like a reaction to it I was not fucking expecting at all, because there's a rape scene in the movie, but it's so fucking goofy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that kind of a 70s rape scene where she's kind of like, she like starts to like it halfway through. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a, it's not obviously not how, you know, you treat women and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's also not, it's not real life. It's an old 70s film that doesn't have, you know, current political correctness involved. Like, you can't, you have to look at it for what it was and when it was made, you know, again, in context.
Exactly, yep.
And people just weren't doing that. People were actually, like, offended when they're watching that. I'm like, well, okay, it's not even a graphic scene.
Mm.
You know, B, it's the guy is clearly an asshole. The film presents him as an asshole. It's not like a good guy, like, raped it to me. I'm like, hey, isn't it great to rape people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, but they just couldn't even handle the scene. They couldn't handle the scene where one of the female characters got raped. I'm like, it's setting up this guy as a bad guy.
Right, right, right.
It's something to show the, you know, the audience, like, this, he's bad. Look, he did something bad. It's like, if you have somebody murdering somebody in a scene, you know, it's not like that. It's very, the way they looked at a rape scene in the 70s was very similar.
Well, look at Death Wish 2. I mean, that was brutal, what happened to his daughter.
Yeah, this wasn't even any, like, one-tenth as graphic as that. And you should have seen the way people were reacting, man. It's like, fuck.
Can you imagine if you would have played the original Straw Dogs?
Yeah, exactly. Everyone just, like, stops drinking and just starts crying. Like,
yeah,
oh,
you would have been tarred and feathered, you know?
Just bumped everybody out, sorry.
And again, like you said, like it's just that knee-jerk reaction, right? And it's almost like, okay, well, okay, I think this is the way I'm supposed to react. You know what I mean? Like, I can't...
Well, they were with a group. They're in a public place, and I guess they felt self-conscious. People were looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And so that's, I mean, that's one of the things I love about Cinema Sewer. I mean, it's the absolute antithesis of political correctness. I mean, it's balls out, you know, just... offensive and everything. Well, I mean, not to me, you know what I mean? But it's definitely not something I'm going to be reading on the subway, you know what I'm saying?
Well, the way I come at it from a writing point of view is I kind of think of myself as kind of like a Carnival Barker, mm-hmm. you know? Where I'm like, you know, step right up, you know, check out this crazy fucking thing. Like, this is amazing. You're going to love this. Like, this happens to be the fucking worst. Or, you know, it's like a, you know, I'm not here to condemn anything or even to, like, you know, tell you what to think about it. But I'm there to get you in the door, you know what I mean? I'm there to, like, do the ballyhoo. Mm-hmm. That's the way I kind of view myself as in terms of, like, the writing style for the magazine.
Well, one of the things, too, with Cinema Sewer as well, I mean, as much as I love reading it, I also find it to be a very frustrating experience because half of these movies, I wouldn't even have the first clue how to track them down. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had some criticism about that, too, where people are like, you know, you should write about stuff that's coming out on DVD this week or this month or that way, you know, because that's kind of how, you know, it's kind of a modern way to review things.
Right.
You know, it's the way websites work. It's, I think they get their free DVD sent to them because that's the stuff that, you know, is coming out this week, and then they write about that, and people mm-hmm. know what's out, and they go and buy. But I'm not really, that's not really my vision for what I want the magazine and the books to be. They're not meant to be, timely in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to be able to, you know, I'm not really concerned with what's just come out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff I've written about in Cinema Sewer, when I did write about it, it wasn't available. Like you say, there was no way to see it. And then in years since, the stuff has come out and people are able to see it. And then I've got, like, you know, some of the earliest writing on that film. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's like, it's there. It's going to be there. And when, you know, eventually this stuff is going to come out, and then you'll be able to go back and be like, oh yeah, this thing. You know
yeah.
what I mean? So it's got a timelessness
It's almost has this feeling like you're walking down 42nd Street in 1974 New York City, right? You just pop into a shop and all of a sudden there's Cinema Sewer, you know? It's got that feeling, you know, and that's something I really appreciate about it. It's the same thing. I mean, with our website too. I mean, like, we've started the website, it's been up for about, I guess we're going on 5 months, so it's pretty new, but some friends of mine are saying, yeah, so, you know, they don't really share my sensibilities, and they're like, yeah, so, I went on your website, and, yeah, all the movies you're reviewing are quite, like, obscure. Like, would you ever want to review, like, let's say, Annabelle, or The Conjuring? I'm like, hell no. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want to review, I mean, those movies, you want a review of Annabelle, you're going to find them everywhere else, you know what I mean? Like, I would rather review Massacre Mafia style or something, you know what I mean? Like,
exactly, yeah.
And just get, and also, like, you know, like, everybody, I mean, do these more modern horror movies, do they, or what have you, do they need the publicity? No. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
We
and
want...
Then and then you lose some of your respectability, too, because then people come and they want to... They get the sense, even for a second, that you're only reviewing it because you got a free copy and
exactly.
you're getting free copies.
And then, of course...
They're not going to listen to what you have to say.
And then, of course, you know, if you're getting a free copy, then, you know, you have your integrity as a reviewer. Like, you're like, well, I mean, you know, I really want to be honest, but at the same time, I want to keep getting my screeners, so...
Exactly. You know, exactly. So. I don't think a lot of people doing these websites realize how they're coming off, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I told a lot of the DVD companies to, you know, stop sending me stuff because, you know, I want to review what I want to review. And when you send me stuff, I do feel like I'm like, beholden to give you, like, props or something just for sending me free shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to feel that way.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, you know, even like, we've been lucky enough to be sent some stuff, and all the same, like, we'll review warts and all, you know what I mean? Like...
Mm-hmm.
If, I mean, thankfully, most of the stuff that we've been sent has, you know what, if it's absolute garbage, we just won't review it. That's all.
You gotta do it, yeah.
Better to do that than, like, you know, burn a bridge or something, right?
They're gonna hate your guts.
But if it's something I actually went out and spent my money, you know, renting it or buying it, it's a piece of shit, I'm gonna say it's a piece of shit, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And I like having that freedom. Speaking of a piece of shit, we gotta talk about Things. Because that's one of our favorite movies, I think.
Cinema Sewer was one of the very first publications to ever write about Things.
Mm.
It was really early on. I think like the fifth or sixth issue I wrote about what I thought was one of the worst films I'd ever seen.
No doubt.
Which was a movie called Night of the Animals.
Oh, okay.
Which has never come out on DVD and is kind of an obscure film, but it was a piece of shit. And then a reader, again, it was like another long-time friend of mine now who I got in contact with because he said he read something in Cinema Sewer and then had to write to me about it. But he saw that article and he's like, oh, man, this guy clearly has not seen Things. So he sent me a videotape of Things, which his friend had found, I think, in like a, you know, a, a discount bin at a video store somewhere, and it made him a copy. And so that was kind of how it started. So I was like, okay, well, I have to admit, this is way worse than the film I thought was the worst film of all time. In fact, I couldn't think of another film that had ever been made. Things kind of transcend bad.
It's it does. Yeah.
It's not even so much that it's the worst movie. It's just that it's like an ordeal.
Well, you know, it's funny because people one of the cliches that I really hate is it's so bad it's good, right? But I mean,
right.
When people say that about let's say Planet Nine from Outer Space, and again, that drives me crazy too. When people say, worst movie ever made. Like, how the fuck can a movie that's so fucking entertaining, from frame one to the last, be the worst movie ever made? No, it's one of the best movies ever. But I mean, this whole so bad it's good, Showgirls or something. You know what I mean? But Things is so bad that it's good that it then transcends being good to being beyond bad to being fucking terrible. And like you said, it's an ordeal. I mean, the movie should be outlawed by the Geneva Convention, I think. And it's insane. I mean, and yet I've seen it about 7 times. You know what I mean?
Because you want to, it's like drinking bad milk, you're like, oh, fuck, this is bad. And your friend's like, what is it? And yeah, taste this. You want them to fucking taste how bad it is.
Exactly.
That's a good. No, you're not going to believe how bad this is. It really, really has gone off.
And your friend's like, I don't think. Okay, let me take a sip, And then you're like, hey, buddy, you got to come try this,
Meanwhile, then an hour later, the whole room has tasted this horrible, horrible movie.
You're all puking your guts out, and then you got to get somebody else. I might have been exposed to it from your writing, and I remember when you were saying this movie will fucking wreck you. I'm thinking to myself, I've seen some really bad things in my time. I mean, how bad can this movie be? And within, I would say, about 7 or 8 minutes, it's like my hand was almost like reaching for the remote. Like I had to shut it off, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, and I was like. I was just transfixed, and I was like, what is going on here? You know what I mean? Who are these people? Where did they come from? Like, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, these are the most unlikable characters, the most, a bunch of hosers in Scarborough, just drinking beer and ripping on each other, and all of a sudden you got these, paper mache monsters coming out of the woodwork, And I remember talking to, Lewis from Suspect Video, right?
Yeah, I met him when I was in London, Ontario.
Right. At Shockstock, yeah. I'm looking forward to going up there this year. Are you going to be there this year?
No, I think probably one of the only years I'll be there, because they flew me actually in as a special guest. So
Okay,
it's
cool.
Really expensive to fly all by myself, paying the bill all the way from Vancouver. It's $800.
Because I missed it last year, but I'm definitely going to be going this year. But I remember, so Lewis is like, so we were talking about Things, and he goes, first of all, he's like, yeah, have you read Robin's review of Things? I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I have. And he goes, were you able to watch all the way through? I go, yeah. I mean, I in the interest of full disclosure, I did fast forward it, here and there. But at the same time, I mean, I did manage to do it in one sitting, and he says, yeah, you're a better man than I, what I mean?
I wasn't able to do it in one sitting. I had to take a break about 2/3 of the way through. I couldn't make it again.
And then the next day,
that was just kind of almost to clear my head.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't because I was bored or anything like that. It's just how down is up and up is down. I'm like, I gotta sweep the cobwebs from my brain. I don't even know where I am anymore. It's just upsetting.
I know. So I made it through, and I was like, and then I was just like, as you said, I was like, my brain was just like, I don't know what the hell is going on at this point. You know what I mean? It's like I stepped through a wormhole or something, And then the next morning I woke up and I had to return the movie. I'm like, okay, well, no, I want to watch it one more time. You know what I mean? So you're saying that Xanadu kind of, has that sort of, way of sort of like a virus sort of effect, but yeah, Things kind of did that with me too.
It does, but it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if there is anything like Things.
No, it's insane. I mean, we did a list of the seven best, Toronto or GTA film movies, and we did the 7 worst. And I mean, Things was the worst, but it's also as much as I ripped on Things, I mean, I cannot recommend it hard, more so. I mean, you got to see it. If only just to say you did it, you know what I mean? It's like jumping out of an airplane. You just got to do it once in your life to say you did it,
Yeah, for sure.
With a parachute, at least,
I've been actually watching a lot of, speaking of 70s movies, I'm kind of getting into old, 70s sitcoms in this last year. Almost all I've been watching lately is, old 70s TV sitcoms. and that and like the 50s musicals.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that's like the Jeffersons and Different Strokes and
Different Strokes is and, hilarious.
Yeah, like the Tyler Moore Show. And,
you gotta love the 80s. I mean, it's amazing that you in the late 70s, 80s. I mean, the fact that you had two separate shows with black adopted midgets. I mean, one is enough. You know what I mean? One is crazy enough, and then there was two. You know, Different Strokes and Webster. I mean, it's like
it's kind of yeah, well, it's a similar thing happening now. Like with the prevalence of zombies. there was 1 month there where there was two zombie stripper movies came out at the same time.
True.
I'm like, fuck, dude, like, one's plenty, like, holy shit.
I know, don't even get me started with zombies, because, I mean, like, I'm a child of Romero and Fulci, like, I'm a zombie fanatic, but I'm getting fed up with zombies, I mean, you know.
Did you read my thing in Cinema Sphere recently, about where I was like, I'm dead boycotting zombies?
Yeah, it's blame it on The Walking Dead, you know, it's zombie fatigue, it's like, enough, you know?
Too much, like, I'm same as you, I'm a huge Fulci fan. And it's like, I'm just going to watch those movies. Like, fuck it. I'm not doing any new zombies. and my zombie boycott is 5 years. I'm 2 years into it.
Yeah.
But I got 3 more years to go. And it's all media. Like, I don't buy any zombie comics. And I go to the comic store every Wednesday. Like,
oh, so do I. Tomorrow's comic book day. I'm so excited, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, I've had to not buy a few things that I actually wanted to buy. But, hey, you know, I got to stick to it.
But, you know, I mean, the fact is you now have zombies appearing in insurance commercials. You know, there's like Geico commercial. It's impossible to avoid zombies.
If more of us would boycott them, then maybe this would end.
Yeah, I mean, there's zombie musicals. It's insane. And then, you know, you have these Walking Dead. I can't stand The Walking Dead. I hate that bloody show.
Never watched an episode.
Have you read the comic? Because people say, oh, well, the comic's fantastic. I've never...
Yeah, I read the first two trade paperbacks. Yeah.
Okay, like you... Because you would think, I mean, you know, I love zombies, I love comics, I would love the show, but I mean, I try to make my way through the first season, and it's just so bloody dull. It's just art, you know, it's like, let's argue, oh, there's a zombie, kill it, okay, let's argue some more, you know what I mean? And it's, and then all these fans that are so, like, you know, just Walking Dead crazy, I mean, you show them something by, let's say, Matei or something, you know what I mean? And they're gonna be like, what the fuck? I mean, no, this is not zombie, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's, yeah, it's, it, dude. We've definitely reached critical mass in the whole zombie thing. I'm not boycotting it like you, but, you know, I don't devour everything zombie-related anymore. It's just, it's too much, you know?
I'm an extremist, I admit it. When it comes to movie shit.
So, let me ask you, when is the next issue of Cinema Sewer coming out? It's been,
It comes out every February, like clockwork.
Okay.
I missed the deadline once, since doing this in 97. Usually it's kind of middle of February, February 15th to 20th, that week around there.
Mm-hmm.
And then this will also be the last issue of my comic Sleazy Slice, mm-hmm. which is issue 8. So it's issue 28 of Cinema Sewer is coming out in February 2015. And yeah, Sleazy Slice is ending, which is kind of sad. But it's just too hard to do comics. Sorry, it's part of the porn comic, right? So it's I'm having a lot of challenges getting distribution, you know, of any kind.
Well, I can imagine.
It's like, yeah, there's really no room for porn comics anymore, which is weird.
Yeah.
I also have Graphic Thrills,
uh-huh, yep.
Which is my other book series other than Cinema Sewer.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming out in 2015 as well, in July. And that's a copy table book series, full color, all about the history of adult movie posters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
From 1970 to 1985.
The Golden Years,
yeah. Later in 2015, I'll have Cinema Sewer Book 5 coming up.
Cool. Well, I mean, I'll definitely, I'll definitely be picking up all of those.
Great. Well, so I'm happy to hear it. I hope more people do.
And what about the next Retardatron? I guess that'd be...
That was a three volume series. That's all.
Okay, so you're done? That's no more?
No more Retardatron.
That's too bad. You should, like, take it on the road, do a Retardatron road show, you know?
I've thinking about doing a screening of it here in Vancouver at the Fox Theater sometime in this next year, so that should be good.
It's a good
venue. I don't get out of my own hometown too often. For instance, that appearance I had in London, Ontario last year was the first time I've ever been to Ontario.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Probably the only appearance I'll have there.
So you've never been to Toronto?
No, never been to Toronto. Only ever been to London for a few days.
Because we'd love to have you here, man. You can crash on my couch if you want.
I would in a second if somebody was interested in paying my airfare. But I can't drop a grand every time I want to go to an appearance. So
yeah, that's a shame. That's a shame because
I feel cut off sometimes being in Vancouver because you're like on the way. You're on the opposite side of the country from where everything's happening.
Yeah,
especially like all these conventions. And I've never been able to go to Chiller or any of these conventions. You know, because I'm so fucking far away.
That's a shame because I was going to say, you know, I hope one day I can actually, meet you in person. But, seeing as I don't see myself going to Vancouver anytime. I mean, not that I don't want to go. I do want to go. But, I mean, you know, again, of course, it's not, people don't realize how big Canada is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's.
Yeah, I have friends that can fly, you know. It's cheaper for them to fly from the UK to go to those events than it is for me. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. And so. So now I totally regret not going to Shockfest last year, so we could have made your acquaintance in person.
It was a good show. I enjoyed it. I really liked it. I sold a ton of books, and everybody was super nice, and I got to sit next to Ginger Lynn
awesome.
Like, for a few days, which was a dream come true, considering she was like in some of the very first pornos I ever saw. As like it's like before I was even like, I think I was like 14 or 15. She was super cool about it, too. I was just like, hi, I just talked to you a lot when I was a little kid. Like, how awkward is that? But she was super nice about it.
Now, was this the year that Christina Lindbergh was there?
No.
Oh, that was a year prior, right?
Yeah, that would have been amazing.
I know, eh? I love Christina Lindbergh. Yeah, as I think you do as well, yeah. But Garrett Graham...
The Color One is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's one of my all-time favorites, too. Of course, the uncut version,
Yeah. I remember I originally watched it like a bootleg videotape with no subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't even understand what was happening. And I'm like, this is still one of the best movies I've ever seen. I hate watching movies where I don't understand, understand my English. I hate it.
Yeah.
One of the few examples or instances I can ever remember where I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the only film I ever did that where I watched it, I was in Thailand, and I watched Ong Bak, original, like in the cinema, with just no subtitles, and that was, just the action alone was enough to carry me through,
Are you a big Hong Kong action fan too?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I was really big into that stuff in the 90s for sure. I'm like a huge Jackie Chan fan.
Oh, same here. I was more into it, I would say, back in the 90s than I am now. I loved John Woo's early stuff and Jackie Chan.
Well, that's everybody. I have yet to meet somebody who's like more into it now than they were then. It was like a time when like that was like what everybody was into. Isn't that kind of weird how it goes in trends like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like film fandom goes in trends.
Well, speaking of Vancouver, I mean, that's where Rumble in the Bronx was filmed. I mean, that was a pretty... that was one of the most... one of the most pathetic attempts at, passing off a Canadian city as, like, a major U.S. urban,
I love that experience of seeing Rumble in the Bronx on Granville Street here in Vancouver. I didn't live here in the city yet. I was visiting with my wife, and so we were staying at this little art gallery because we were there for a zine convention. We just live on Vancouver Island, and we came to town for this convention, and Rumble in the Bronx was playing, and I'm like, oh my god, I've never seen a Jackie Chan movie new in the theater.
Exactly.
Yeah. Kind of like, some of the older ones at like rep theaters and stuff. So, and they were years old by that point. So I thought, oh, we gotta go, and like this is this big North American he had the big brawl and other stuff like back in the day, but this was his kind of his first, his reemerging.
Exactly.
And reintroduction to North America.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and saw it, and I just fucking loved it so much, and then we came out of the theater, and we're walking back to the gallery, and just like, okay, there's the pile of rubble of the grocery store. Like, we just watched the movie. Like, that's weird. It's still sitting there. It's like, oh, there's the car park where the truck fell off and all the balls fell, like directly across the street from where the. It's just so bizarre. Like, seeing all of the locations on the walk home from the theater, and I had no clue that that was going to happen. It was just a neat little
Oh yeah, I too saw it in the theater. I remember like we were just laughing our ass off because there were so many. I can't remember what it was, but there was this particular cell phone that was. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I think I do.
It was a cell phone that it was like ubiquitous on TV. They were advertising it. It was like some sort of like pay-as-you-go phone or something that was only available in Canada, and he was using that phone, and we're just like, you know, we were losing it because of that. But
yeah, and you can see the mountains in the background. Mountains of New York.
Exactly. It's like they're not the Catskills, you know what I mean? It's supposed to be like the Bronx, right? So. Seriously,
like, yeah. Apparently, Jackie Chan's production company just fucking left town, didn't pay anybody.
I had no clue. Wow. So anyway, listen. This would be the time. You know, if this was like, let's say the Tonight Show. I mean, this is the time when you would plug your new movie. So plug away, Robin.
Well, I already mentioned Graphic Thrills. Mm-hmm. The new cinemas are coming out. But the books. Really proud of the books. It's each volume. Like I said, volume 5 is coming out, and each one is 120 pages of the best of the zine issues, which go out of print pretty fast. I only print 2,000 copies, so. And then each book has 80 pages of brand new material that's exclusive to the books. And I've got actually all the pages here for volume 5 that's coming out. It's almost finished. And it's got a bunch of really crazy shit in it. Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff that I've been working on all year. Some of these essays, I've like literally been working on them for a year. Researching the histories of certain filmmakers and certain films that, a lot of which are shit that no one's ever seen or heard of. At least in a long time. For instance, this bizarre story of a Romanian piss porn cult. Like, bizarre, like something that's never been translated into English. So I'm always trying to, turn over rocks for weird shit that mm-hmm. that hasn't seen the light of day, and try to shine a light on it and write up about it in interesting and funny ways and do funny cartoons about it.
Mm-hmm. And for those that are listening, I mean, if they don't have if they're not fortunate enough like me to have a store nearby that sells Cinema Sewer, I mean, they can go to cinemasewer.com, right?
And right, cinemasewer.com, and from there you can get access to my online store, my rarely updated podcast that's about 2 or 3 times a year, and also basically my you can find me on Facebook. I'm under Cinema Sewer, and also Robin Bougie, Bougie, and find me on there, and I'm always updating stuff about stuff that's available in my online store. I've been selling a lot of my vintage adult magazines because I collect those as well. Mm-hmm. So when I get doubles and stuff, I sell them in my online store as well.
Are the pages, they don't stick together, do they?
Yeah, I only sell off the sticky ones. So if you don't like my spooge, don't buy them. No, I'm joking. No, I don't. No, they're all complete. No pages stuck together. No pages missing.
Because I remember when I was a kid, I would go down to some of the used bookshops, down in the city and pick up buy a Playboy or two, and all of a sudden I take it home and I'm like, yeah, this is like one solid, piece of magazine. Like, it's
a piece of resin.
Exactly. Anyway, I gotta say, it's a pleasure talking to you. Like I said, I've been a long time reader, and I can't wait for the next issue of Cinema Sewer.
It's a really fun hobby to put together, and I'm just continually amazed that anybody cares. I really just kind of make it for myself. I'm pretty selfish that way.
But
the fact that other people care is always a fucking thrill.
But that's the amazing thing, right? Like, when you do something you love and that you're passionate about, and then you find out that, hey, I'm not the only sicko out there that's just into this shit. You know what I mean? There's a lot of us out there,
That's always a nice surprise.
Yeah. So, that's the thing. When I picked up my first Cinema Sewer and I was flipping through, I'm like, God damn it, I'm not the only sick person out there. There's somebody else, So it's good to know.
And I just got the news the other day that the books have now sold 25,000 copies. So there's a few of you out there.
Amazing. Good stuff. And worldwide, too, right?
What's that?
They're telling you they sell worldwide, don't they? I mean, it's not just North America, right?
Oh, yeah, that's all around the world. Yeah, they're available. They're available on all kinds of retailers and bookstores everywhere, so. But I always like when people buy it directly from me because I can sign it for you, and I can do a little doodle in there, and and I get way more of the money, and I can just put that money towards putting out new issues. So.
Well, I mean, like I said, I have my volume 3 right in front of me, and I have a piece of original art right on the very front.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I bought it directly from you, so it's one of my prized possessions.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful, beautiful depiction of a cum fart. Okay. Anyways, Rob, once again, thanks a lot, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks, man.
And take care.